The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
They call him Preacher, and they call him when they need help. Now, a Mexican brother and sister have asked the legendary frontiersman to accompany them into the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, to find a hidden treasure of gold and silver.
The relics were wrapped in cloth and placed in heavy bags. The gold bars were loaded in wooden chests. Don Francisco picked 10 of his most trusted men to go with him, and they loaded the treasure onto pack mules. Then they set off from the mission into the mountains, following this river at first.
Do them papers say how far they followed the river?
Not exactly. According to the manuscript, the party branched off into a dry canyon that rose steadily, taking many turnings, until it reached a high plateau. There, they located a suitable hiding place and concealed the treasure before returning to the mission, and the violence that awaited them there.
That's all it says? No offense to your old ancestor, Esteban, but shoot, that ain't much to go on.
I know. Don Francisco was writing this not as directions for finding the treasure, but only as part of the story of his life. Therefore, he was not as specific as he might have been.
Any mention of any other landmarks besides the twisty canyon and the high plateau?
Only one. Let me see. Ah, here it is. He says that the treasure will be protected by the Wolves of God.
Wolves of God? Wonder what tarnation he meant by that.
I have no idea. There is no explanation in the manuscript.
Well, whatever he was talking about, maybe we'll know it when we see it.
But in a land stained by cruelty and war, the Spanish treasure has drawn the interest of a treasure hunter with ruthless paid killers as his partners.
They found the treasure, I'm sure of it. Let me see. There's some sort of tunnel. Preacher and one of the Indians climbed out of it. Now, there must be a cave down there below the cliff. What better place for Don Francisco to have concealed the treasure?
Yeah, you're right. They're throwing branches and such down the hole, so they must be planning to build a fire in that cave.
There's no point in waiting any longer. We need to climb back down, join up with the rest of the fellas, and get over there and jump those folks before they know we're anywhere around.
Sounds good to me, Ross.
Wait just a moment. Perhaps it would be better to wait and let them bring all the treasure out of the cave before we make our move.
Hell no. I didn't have a problem with letting them find the cash. But there are plenty of us to haul it up out of that cave. We need to jump them now, while all their attention is on what they're doing. If we wait until they brought the treasure out and loaded it onto the wagons, Preacher will be on his guard even more than he was before. I want that son of a bitch dead before he knows what's hit him.
The caves dotting the wild mountainside are guarding an explosive secret. And Preacher's gut tells him that whoever next claims the Spanish treasure will be the next to die. Don't miss the first Mountain Man 12, Preacher's Fortune. Available now from Graphic Audio.
Do not go out after dark. That is when the beast will hunt.
Gregor says there was something lurking in the darkness tonight. Something that was hunting.
Shh.
What?
Listen.
Congratulations, Miss Creed.
What do you want from me?
Right this way, my dear.
Anya, help me, please!
If I die inside there, Bob goes free.
Of course.
I want that sword.
The sword stays with me. That's my final offer.
Here's my counteroffer. Ah! The sword, Anya. Now.
Rogue Angel number 12, The Soul Stealer, from Graphic Audio. And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, owner-operator. Book number 2, Reefer Madness and More Tales of the Open Road by Ido Van Belkin. Copyright 2008, Ido Van Belkin. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode number 1, Thick as Thieves.
Rather than take another load from the Ontario Food Terminal, Mark decided he was in need of a break. In the past few months, he foiled a band of smugglers, was the target of an insurance scam, almost got ripped off for unnecessary repairs to his rig, solved a murder on a movie shoot, helped a friend get money from an unscrupulous shipper, was nearly killed taking over for Bud and working as a dispatcher, had nearly been run off the road by a road-raging fellow trucker, been detained by Canada Customs, and had solved a murder that had been made to look racially motivated. Instead of taking another load on, he decided to take a load off, of both his mind and body. He rented a parking spot at an operation near the airport and took a cab to Pearson International, where he booked himself on the first flight that was headed someplace warm. That warm place turned out to be Bermuda, and when he returned a week later, he felt refreshed and alive, and ready for anything the trucking business could throw at him. Mark called Bud while he was riding in the cab that was taking him from the airport back to Motherlode.
Hey, Dalton. That cell phone of yours has got some range.
I'm back in Toronto, Bud.
Already?
I went away for a week, just long enough to recharge my batteries.
Or deplete your bank account.
I could use a load.
You're out by the airport, right?
Yep, over by the park and fly.
Okay, when you get to your rig, head up to the Bacardi plant, Brampton.
The distillery?
Yeah, they got a load of booze that needs a special kind of driver.
You mean one that won't drink all the profits?
No, Dalton. You got any idea how much a trailer full of booze is worth?
Depends on who you are, I guess.
Dalton. We're talking a cool million more, and it's no more difficult to steal than a truck full of widgets. So guess which load is high up on a thief's top 10 list.
So basically, I'll be driving a filet mignon through a soup kitchen.
Yeah, that's the gist of it.
Well, just wanted to be clear. But why me?
To paraphrase the sign that used to be in the Leafs dressing room in Maple Leaf Gardens, let's just say that theft does not rest lightly on these shoulders.
Mark was pretty sure Bud was giving him some kind of compliment, but he couldn't be 100%.
I'll call you when I got the load.
Me and a whole bunch of other people.
What do you mean?
You'll see.
The shipper at Bacardi was waiting for Mark, and didn't waste any time getting him to hook up his rig to the trailer that was sitting at the loading dock.
Here's your schedule.
The young shipping agent handed Mark a clipboard with a table on it that had times listed on the left at 15-minute intervals, and boxes where he could put a set of initials on the right.
You call the number on the top of the sheet every 15 minutes until you reach the distribution center in Winnipeg.
What if I have to pee?
If you miss a call, we check the global positioning satellite to find out where you are, and then we send the police.
Mark was a bit confused. This sounded like a military operation, not a load shipment.
Are you sure you've got the right guy for this load? I mean, don't I have to, I don't know, be interviewed or write a test or something?
Your dispatcher helped us process all the papers for you. We were expecting you sometime next week, but since you were available today, we thought, why wait?
Mark stopped in his tracks. They were making it sound like he was the only driver out there.
I'm sure there are a lot of guys that could take this load.
The young shipping agent began walking towards the door to the shipping dock.
Don't worry about the cost of the calls. We're paying you a dollar for every call you make.
I'm really glad you chose me.
You got 5 minutes before you head out. Good luck.
Now, why would he say that?
Mark left the distillery at 10 a.m., just moments after confirming the time with the security guard at the gate. He turned right onto Steeles Avenue and was heading west. He planned on getting on the 410 at the off-ramp. As he pulled closer, he saw that there was a two-vehicle accident completely blocking the entrance to the ramp.
Oh, just my luck.
Mark turned Motherlode around. There was another entrance ramp to the 410 about 2 miles down the road. He glanced at his watch. There were a couple of minutes to go before he had to call in. Mark slowed Motherlode to a stop as a traffic light turned red.
Oh, you have got to be kidding.
Suddenly, Mark felt his cab door open up and turned to see a man in a ski mask climbing into his rig. Mark tried to push the man back onto the road. Before Mark could get the first man out of his truck, a second man had jumped into the passenger side door and was pulling Mark out from behind the steering wheel.
Let go of the damn wheel!
It all went down in under 30 seconds. The haze began to clear, and Mark realized that the first man in the mask was driving Motherlode. The second man had a pistol pressed hard against the back of his head. For a brief moment, Mark thought about taking on the two men. Mark doubted the driver would be able to control the rig while he punched and kicked at him. But there was the other man with a gun to consider, especially when the value of the load was more than enough for somebody to kill for. He decided to go along with the hijackers, for now. Besides, even if he did nothing, the global positioning satellite would kick in after he failed to make his scheduled call, and they'd probably be stopped by police before they even got onto the 401.
Turn left here.
In no time, they were heading south on First Gulf Boulevard, the continuation of Rutherford Road south of Steeles.
Here's good.
The driver pulled over, put on his hazard lights, then produced a pair of wire cutters from his jacket pocket. As the other held the gun to Mark's head, the driver exited the cab, and for the next minute, Mark could hear him crawling up onto the cab, most likely disconnecting the GPS transmitter.
Aw, damn.
Now nobody knows where you are.
The driver climbed back into the truck, and moments later, they were moving again. They continued down First Gulf, but before they reached Kennedy Road, the driver made a left onto Biscayne Crescent. They were making another turn when the man with the gun noticed Mark concentrating on the name written on a sign pole to their right.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Enjoying the scenery.
Yeah, well, enjoy this!
The man struck Mark hard in the head with the butt of the pistol. Mark saw sparks behind his eyes for a moment, and then everything went black. Mark slipped into a dream. He was still married and still working as a private investigator. He'd been hired by a Fortune 500 CEO to get the dirt on his wife. The guy wanted a divorce, but knew it would cost him his fortune and then some to see it through. Mark worked the case for a month, then finally caught the woman fooling around with one of her husband's fellow board members. When the CEO saw the tape, he was so pleased to be able to get rid of his wife and business associate on the cheap. He cut Mark a check for $25,000 right there on the spot. Mark's wife's eyes nearly popped out of her head when she saw the check, and they spent a couple of weeks on the beach celebrating Mark's good fortune. Those days had been some of the happiest of Mark's life. Especially watching the sun come up on the beach each morning. Mark was almost blinded by the light. He tried opening his eyes, but the light was too intense. He shielded his eyes and squinted to try and see.
Help! Somebody help!
Hey, you okay, pal?
Mark blinked, his eyes slowly beginning to adjust to the light. He looked at the man standing over him, the man who'd asked him the questions.
Where am I?
Let's hear it one more time, from the top.
Mark was exhausted. He told them his story at least a dozen times already, and since he was telling the truth, his story hadn't changed once over all that time.
My dispatcher told me to pick up a load from the Bacardi distillery. The shipper there gave me a schedule to call in every 15 minutes or so. I left the distillery and was going to get on the 410, But there was an accident on the ramp, so I decided to go south on Kennedy and get to the 410 at Derry Road.
There you go with that car accident again.
The detective was an older man, late 40s, early 50s. He'd told Mark his name earlier in the day, but Mark had forgotten it hours ago.
Yeah, and if there wasn't an accident, I would have gotten on the 410 and probably would have been in Winnipeg by now.
See, the problem is, we checked all the patrols from this morning, and no one remembers anything about an accident on the on-ramp.
So you think I made that up?
The detective just stared at him.
There was an accident, I swear it. They must have been in on it.
Who?
The people who had the accident. Maybe they staged the thing so I'd change my route, and the others could grab me before I reached Kennedy Road.
Mark was smiling now, proud of himself for putting that piece of the puzzle into place.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. And maybe monkeys are gonna start flying out of my ass and singing Hail to the Chiefs. Come on!
The smile suddenly disappeared from Mark's face. The detective decided to change tact.
You got money problems, right?
Mark was caught off guard. He probably should have answered with the all-inclusive,
"Doesn't everybody?"
But the truth was, Mark was doing all right financially, since he hadn't had a lot of expenses apart from the upkeep of Motherlode. So instead of playing it safe...
No. Actually, I'm all right for money.
But trucks are expensive things to keep on the road. A lot of guys would do anything to hold on to their ride.
Yeah, well, I own my rig outright.
This seemed to catch the detective by surprise.
That's quite a feat, a young guy like you.
Not when it's the only thing in the world that's yours.
So, then what's your problem, Dalton? Booze? Drugs? Gambling, maybe?
A smile broke across the detective's face.
Women, right?
Mark was also smiling again, but it was closer to a grimace than an expression of pride.
I'm recently divorced. I've had my fill of women for a while. As for the other stuff, I wouldn't be able to drive if I was addicted to anything. And the only thing I've gambled with in the past few months has been my life.
Yeah, seems there are police departments all across the country who know about you. Hell, even the customs people put in a good word.
Mark was confused. He'd been questioned like a suspect for the last few hours, and now the detective was telling him that police forces, not private individuals, but police forces, were vouching for him. And he was still stuck in this office under interrogation.
Look, if you want to arrest me, then do it. If you want to hold me for a while, then put me in a cell, because I could use the rest. But if you've got nothing on me, I'd appreciate it if you let me be on my way.
Don't you want to catch the guys that did this to you?
Of course I do. And who says I won't?
Somebody told me that about you. You like working on your own.
That's right.
How would you like to work on this with someone else?
Like who?
Like us.
You mean like a sting or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, hell. Okay.
Two days later, Mark had himself another load of Bacardi spirits to deliver. Except this time, there were several key differences in the way he was to deliver the goods. First of all, he wouldn't be traveling to Winnipeg. This load was going from Brampton to the Liquor Control Board of Ontario Distribution Center on Enterprise Road in Malton. It wasn't much of a drive, little more than half an hour. But the last time Mark had been hijacked, it had happened less than a kilometer from the distillery. Secondly, there were only two pallets of empty Bacardi boxes in the back of the trailer Mark would be hauling. Hiding in behind the empty boxes would be six members of the Peel Regional Police Emergency Task Force, fully armed and ready to spring on any unsuspecting hijackers. And finally, rather than placing a call to a specific telephone number every 15 minutes to maintain contact, Mark would be continuously on the phone with the police in unmarked vehicles that would be traveling the route in front and behind him. With all these precautions and safety measures, Mark was sure the risk he was taking was minimal, and that if there were hijackers on the prowl today, the chances of catching them were excellent. Mark and the detectives went over the plan one last time.
Why me?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
Well, everything went so well for the thieves the first time they robbed you. They probably figure you're an easy mark. Your name on a shipping list probably sets off all kinds of bells and whistles. They probably think stealing from you is like taking candy from a baby.
Nothing like bolstering a man's confidence before sending him into the field.
Good Good luck.
Thanks.
The police all hurried into their vehicles, and Mark got behind the wheel of Motherlode. At exactly 10:30 a.m., he called Monahan on the phone and kept the line open while he drove.
Leaving the yard.
Right behind you.
A few minutes later, Mark was turning onto the on-ramp for the southbound lanes of Highway 410.
No accident this time.
Mark headed south on the 410, then picked up the 401 heading east.
See anything suspicious?
Well, there's a couple in front of me who looks to be having a wicked argument.
That's not what I mean.
Sorry, it's just that this ride is so, routine.
10 minutes later, he was exiting the 401 at Dixie Road. Mark turned north on Dixie, and the second street on his right was Enterprise Road.
Almost there and not a bad guy in sight.
Yeah, that's just great. Too bad you didn't have a trailer full of booze while you're at it.
Mark backed his trailer up to an empty loading dock. Mark hurried out of his truck and into the receiving area so the guys on the dock wouldn't get any surprises when they opened the back of Mark's trailer.
Here, let me get that.
Suit yourself, pal.
Swarm!
Within seconds of the door opening up, several gun barrels were pointed directly at Mark's skull.
Sorry, boys. Seems we've made it here without a hitch.
Mark was eager to try and make the sting work with another load, but for some reason, the police weren't all that interested.
This wasn't a task force operation, and we do have a few other criminals to catch, so...
You can't just leave it at that. These are million-dollar robberies. Armed robberies. Surely that warrants the full resources of the police department.
The detective showed Mark a smile that told him he thought he was being a wise ass. Mark decided to lighten up, because whenever he started talking smart, especially to the police, was when he got into the most trouble.
We're gonna be keeping a close watch on the shipments coming out of the distillery and shipments out of a half dozen other yards in the city. But we can't afford the manpower to put on another sting like we did today. Now, we gotta get back to our regular work, and Bacardi has to get back to shipping their product.
I'd still like to take a few more loads for them.
Look, Dalton, this is a highly organized crime ring with employees, a distribution network, and all sorts of resources at their disposal. The last thing we want or need is some civilian who figures he's gonna bring the whole thing down by himself. You hear me?
I hear you, Detective.
Mark's eyes were on the floor, but they rose up slowly until he was looking the detective straight in the eye.
Now maybe you can hear me. I got ripped off for a very profitable load, and then I successfully delivered a truck full of police officers to a booze warehouse, a delivery that paid me nothing. As you pointed out on a previous occasion, I do have a truck that's expensive to run and a business to operate, so getting another load from the distillery would be an excellent way of making up for my lost time.
Yeah, well, since you put it that way, I suppose I could ask the shipper for a favor and get you a few more loads.
Mark was still angry and didn't appreciate the detective being so agreeable. He'd been all ready to have it out with the man, and now he had to be polite.
Yeah, well, thank you.
You know, just stay out of trouble, all right?
I don't go looking for it, you know. It just sort of finds me.
Mark wound up getting a load to Montreal that was scheduled to leave the distillery the next morning around 11. He got a room at the Comfort Inn on Clark Boulevard. There, as he lay back on the bed, his mind began to wander over the events of the day, and he eventually got to thinking about how the thieves had known to hijack him the first time, but leave him alone the second. It was as if someone had tipped off the thieves so they wouldn't bother with the second load. That meant it was either an inside job, or somebody was spending an awful lot of time watching the trucks being loaded. If someone knew what they were looking at, it wouldn't be too hard for them to figure out what had been loaded onto the trailer. So the thieves had probably known Mark had been involved with the police, maybe even knew there were police inside the trailer as well as in front and behind him on the road. But there would be no police trailing him tomorrow morning. He'd be all by himself again, a sitting duck for a group of knowledgeable thieves. Or maybe not. He'd promised Detective Monahan that he wouldn't try to catch the thieves by himself, and he absolutely had no intentions of trying it, That would be stupid. However, what was to stop him from, say, putting the word out and letting people know that he was willing to go into business with the thieves? It would be easier for them if they had a driver on their side, able to provide them with information on loads and maybe take a knock on the head every once in a while for a percentage of the load they'd be stealing from him. At over $1 million a load, even a 1% cut would be like winning the lottery. Then, when he'd been accepted by the thieves, he could give the police all the information they needed to break up the operation and put everyone involved behind bars for a long, long time. That was a good idea, and he knew just how to make it work. Mark started with the coffee shop of the Comfort Inn. Judging by the number of rigs parked in the hotel lot, the place was popular with truckers who wanted to spend the night somewhere other than their sleeper before taking on a load in the morning. Mark found a group of men sitting around a table, a couple of them wearing ball caps of transport companies, the others casually dressed in sweatsuits.
How you doing, fellas?
The men nodded.
You're looking at one lucky man. Got me a load of booze in the morning, going all the way to Montreal. There's some extra work that goes with the load. Pays, excellent. And it couldn't have come at a better time, too, if you know what I mean. I'm overdue a few payments on my rig, and my ex-wife's screaming at me how the kids need braces. And to top it all off, my mom needs to go into a home. You know what those places charge each month?
And on he went, spreading the word that there was an owner-operator who was pretty desperate for an infusion of cash. After visiting two more coffee shops and a nearby bar, giving the same performance at each place, Mark headed back to the Comfort Inn and waited.
Hello?
You Dalton?
Yeah, who's this?
Hear you're hurting for cash.
Isn't everyone?
Not drivers who play it smart.
I think I know what you mean.
You sound smart to me.
Thanks.
You got a load tomorrow, right?
That's right.
Now a dumb shit driver would take that load straight to its destination and get his mileage, right?
Right.
But a smart driver, now he'd stop for coffee at a little mom and pop shop at the corner of Steelwell and Hedgedale.
I hear they serve good coffee there.
You are smart, aren't you?
I like to think so.
You park your rig as far from the coffee shop as you can and you stay inside for a second cup of coffee. When you get out, you check your load, and then you call the cops.
That's it?
Earn yourself a quick 10 large, cash.
Sounds easy.
Easiest money you're ever gonna make in your life.
Mark thought back on his days as a private investigator and had to admit, $10,000 for having a cup of coffee beat the hell out of working for a living. But of course, he wouldn't be taking any money for his part in this. As soon as he got off the phone, he'd be getting in touch with Detective Monahan to tell him what was going on. Then, tomorrow, when he stopped for a coffee, there'd be cops all over the place just waiting for someone to rip off his trailer.
Oh, one more thing.
What's that?
You try anything funny, like, say, calling the cops. Just remember, we know where your parents live. Something goes wrong with the plan, then something goes wrong with them. You understand?
Mark felt his heart skip a beat.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Mark quickly called his parents.
Hello?
Hi, Mom.
Mark?
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I just wanted to call and see how you and Dad were doing.
Well, his back's acting up, but other than that, we're fine. When are you coming to see us?
As soon as I can, Mom. I love you.
I love you too, honey.
What the hell do I do now?
The next morning, Mark picked up his load. Although he hadn't done anything wrong yet, he found it hard to look the shipper and everyone else on the dock in the eye. He'd gotten into this thing thinking he'd be able to get out whenever he wanted, but such things weren't up to him. When you're in, and it's almost impossible to get out. He'd laughed when Al Pacino said as much in The Godfather Part 3, but now he knew better. For the time being, Mark decided he would go along with the thieves' plan. Of course, he would be looking for an out the whole time, but there was no way on earth he was going to put his parents in any kind of jeopardy. Just thinking about it now made him feel sick to his stomach. As Mark exited the distillery, instead of turning west on Steele's, he turned east so he could make his scheduled stop at the coffee shop that was in the industrial area south of Steele's and west of Tompkin Road. Explaining to the police why he had taken such a detour from Highway 410 just for a cup of coffee would be a tough task, but Mark had always been able to think on his feet, and everyone said he could bullshit with the best of them. If all went well, his trailer would be ripped off and he'd make a report to the police. As long as he wasn't implicated in the robbery, $10,000 would be finding its way to him at some point in the future. He had no intention of keeping the money, and would likely give it to charity, or maybe send his parents on a trip and give the rest to charity. And that would be the end of his career driving loads of booze and cigarettes. Mark turned right onto Tompkin, and then made a right at the first street, Steelwell Road. The coffee shop was on the corner of Steelwell and Hedgedale. It was called Truckastop, and Mark could almost picture the short, aged Italian man that would be working behind the counter inside. They'd told him to park as far away from the shop as possible, and in order to do that, he'd have to drive around the back of the building and park between the building and the fence on the other side of the lane. It was a perfect location for the thieves because the back of the trailer was completely hidden from view and any size truck could back up behind it without attracting much attention. Mark shut down Motherlode, got out, and made sure all the doors to the cab were locked behind him. All he needed was a greedy thief to start looking through his truck after the trailer had been cleaned out. Mark took forever to cross the parking lot and reach the coffee shop, dragging his feet every step of the way. As he neared the shop door, he could just hear the sound of another truck in the distance. It was likely already backed up to his trailer, and in less than an hour, he'd be hauling a trailer full of nothing. A short, middle-aged Italian man was behind the counter. He walked up to Mark.
What do you want?
A coffee, please.
Espresso? Or a dirty water?
Pardon me?
You want espresso or Canadian coffee?
Mark had never been in a place that called any kind of coffee Canadian.
Canadian, please.
The man poured out a large cup and Mark dropped a loonie on the counter. Mark glanced around the shop. There were middle-aged and elderly men smoking cigarettes and playing cards all over the place. There was a large screen television high up on the wall in one corner of the room, and there were shelves of products, cookies and soda pop he'd never seen on sale at the A&P, lining two of the other walls. Mark didn't belong here. That was obvious. In fact, no trucker belonged here. This was a kind of social club for older men, or a place where young men who didn't collect regular paychecks conducted their business. Mark imagined what he would sound like talking to the police.
Well, I decided that since I was headed to Montreal, I thought I'd get a little European atmosphere at first. Sure, it's about 20 minutes out of the way, but I just had to have an espresso before I hit the 401.
One again?
Yeah, sure. Espresso this time.
The man smiled, as if Mark's order pleased him to no end. Mark glanced at his watch. He'd been here 20 minutes. He'd finish his espresso and head back to his truck. If he happened on the thieves while they were in the act, then so be it. Mark stirred two spoonfuls of sugar into the tiny cup and drank the coffee in a gulp. He left money on the counter, then headed back outside. It was still cold outside, or at least it felt like it with the way the sweat down Mark's back seemed to turn to ice in the wind. Suddenly, a blue car was racing across the parking lot toward him.
The police!
His first thought upon realizing that he'd be busted was that his parents were going to pay for his mistake. Even though he hadn't tipped anyone off, the police were here now, and the thieves would probably blame him for it. He'd have to do his best to convince them otherwise. Mark began to run. When he reached the alley, he saw that the truck the thieves had loaded, a 24-foot international van body that had the name of some bakery on the side, had also been stopped by the cops. The cops had their guns drawn as the driver and his three helpers were slowly getting out of the cab. Mark ran toward them. A police car screeched to a halt in front of him. Two cops got out, the one on the passenger side first.
Stop right there!
Mark kept running but slowed his pace somewhat. The cop caught up to him, put a hand on him and tried to turn him around. Mark glanced over and made sure the driver and his friends were watching, Then he threw a right cross that caught the cop square on the chin. The cop was dazed a moment, but then recovered. A second later, there were hands all over Mark, pushing him down onto the pavement and twisting his arms behind him.
Take it easy, pal. You'll be all right.
After that, all Mark could think about was whether or not his little performance had been good enough to save his parents' lives. When they arrived at the police station, Mark still hadn't been placed under arrest, and he was beginning to wonder if he was ever going to be. Then he was brought into a room where Detective Monahan sat waiting for him.
Caught the bad guys.
Yeah. What the hell did you think you were doing?
I thought I'd go along with him, then call you to set something up.
So what happened?
They said they'd kill my parents if I talked to you.
You're worried about them, are you?
Mark nodded.
Well, your father's worried about you, too. Says he's gonna kick your ass the next time he sees you.
What?
Give us some credit, Dalton. We knew what you were doing.
You did?
Your dispatcher, Bud, called us and told us all about you. Told us not to be surprised if you went and did something stupid on your own. So instead of trying to stop you, we watched you around the clock. Damned if you didn't go and do just what Bud said you would.
But my parents...
Your parents are all right. And now that we've got everyone involved in the ring locked up, they'll be fine.
The detective's eyes narrowed.
You, on the other hand, are in a whole lot of trouble.
Are you gonna arrest me?
Maybe. See, my problem is, I don't know if I should arrest you or give you a citation. But that's not the trouble I'm talking about.
Then what's my problem?
Constable Bradley, the one you caught with your right hand, his shift ends in about 10 minutes, and he said he'd be dropping by to see you.
See me for what? If you won't be needing me for anything else, I think I'll be moving on now.
You're free to go.
Moments later, Mark was gone.
Episode number 2, Stealing Home.
Mark didn't have to pick up a load until 10 the next morning, so he ordered himself another beer. On the big screen on the far wall at Turtle Jack's, the Toronto Blue Jays were struggling with the Boston Red Sox, down 3-0 in the sixth with a starting pitcher who was lucky he could still find the catcher's mitt. His beer arrived at the end of the inning with the Jays down 4-0, but the frosted cold one delivered by the pretty smiling waitress wasn't the only thing arriving at his table.
Hey, I know you.
Mark stared at the man who had just sat down for a few moments. He looked familiar, but Mark couldn't quite place him.
I'm sorry, I don't remember you.
It's me, Randy Reynolds. We were both driving for Bison Brothers a few years back.
Well, that might be true. Before Mark had ventured out entirely on his own, he had driven for Bison Brothers for a few weeks. But that had been several years ago, and how this guy, this Randy Reynolds, remembered him was nothing short of amazing.
Oh, yeah, hi.
How's it going? Working hard?
Mark had been working hard of late, and with the beers flowing, he didn't mind letting this guy know all about his good fortune.
Oh, you bet I'm working hard. Starting tomorrow, I've got a string of loads that's taken me across the country with a 2-day layover in Vancouver. And when I get back, I've got a ticket to the Jays game against the Yankees.
Mark gestured at the television as if he could see the seat on the giant screen.
First base, 3 rows up. What kind of loads?
Randy had the beer in his hand now, but judging by the way he was holding the bottle, he must have been nursing the thing for the past few hours.
I'm not sure. Got the list in my truck, but my dispatcher assured me it was all high-end, no-touch merchandise. You know, electronics and stuff like that.
That's cool.
What about you? How you doing these days?
Nah, crappy. My old lady's coming down hard on me these last few days. When are you gonna get a load? The magazines are full of ads for drivers. What are you waiting for?
Mark just looked at the guy, not sure what his problem was.
What are you waiting for?
Well, I don't have a truck, for one.
Lots of companies out there, plenty.
Let's just say my abstract's not the cleanest on record at the ministry.
Not all companies do extensive background checks.
Yeah, I'd have to find one of them companies now, wouldn't I?
A few phone calls probably do the trick.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of work to me.
That's why they call it that. You know, work.
Yeah, but then I'd have to be at home using the phone, and the damn woman would be hanging over my shoulder asking, "What'd he say? Did you take the job? When do you start?" You know, her name's Mary. She likes to think of herself as Queen Mary, but I know her as Bloody Mary.
What a lost cause, thought Mark. What man didn't have women trouble every once in a while? And if you had a valid driver's license, there were always plenty of places hiring these days. Mark decided to give up trying to convince the guy there was work out there and made peace with him by simply agreeing to whatever he said.
Gee, sounds like you got it rough.
Man, you don't know the half of it.
The guy kept talking, rambling on and on and on, but Mark wasn't listening anymore. He was too caught up in the game to care. On the screen, there were two out with Blue Jays on first and third. The score 4-0 in the Red Sox favor. The Jays looked to be ready to gamble. The runner on first was taking a big lead, as was the runner on third. Either one of them could have been caught by a quick throw from the pitcher, but the Red Sox seemed intent on having the Jays batter hit a ground ball or strike out trying.
Of course, she's got a sister whose husband is a garbage man for the city. You know how much those guys make in a year? My old lady knows. She likes to remind me of it. All the freaking time.
Randy stopped talking then, and Mark felt like he was supposed to say something to the guy. But he didn't want to take his eyes off the game or encourage him to say any more. And then the Jays runners were on the move. They were trying to steal home.
I'm going to the can.
Yeah, sure.
Mark waved Randy away without taking his eyes off the screen. The runner slid into home just as the ball crossed the plate, and the umpire gestured safe, and the Sox catcher turned around in circles looking for the ball. It had gone all the way to the backstop. The runner from first was rounding third. He was being waved home. The catcher threw the ball to the pitcher covering home. The throw was high, sailing out past the mound and all the way to the second baseman. The second runner scored, safe. The Blue Jays now trailed 4-2, and the momentum of the game had definitely swung in their favor. Mark took a sip of his beer and then took a look around. Randy was gone. He'd said something about the washroom, but that had been a while ago. Maybe he'd moved off and was bothering someone else in the joint now. That was fine by Mark. The Jays were rallying and it was going to be a great finish. When the game went into extra innings, tied 4-4, Mark ordered himself another beer. What the hell?
Hello?
Mark, what the hell is going on?
What do you mean? The game's going into extra innings.
No, not that. Why are you driving like a maniac?
What are you talking about?
I just got a call from someone complaining about the way you're driving.
It's not me. I'm sitting here at Turtle Jack's watching the Jays game.
Well, then, someone is out on the 401, following a Peterbilt that's going back and forth across the lane. On the back of the truck is a sticker that says, "How's my driving? Call 1-800.
It's not me.
They said the name on the back of the truck was Motherlode.
Must be a mistake. I've seen trucks like mine with names like Brother Road, Break the Code, and Driving Mode.
Would you do me a favor? Just take a look outside and see if your truck's there, will you?
Mark got up from his seat and realized he didn't hear the familiar jingle of keys he usually heard when he stood up. He put a hand to his belt loop and discovered his keychain wasn't there.
Oh, no.
Mark ran out of Turtle Jack's and into the parking lot. Motherlode was gone. His home, his life, everything he had in the world had been stolen.
Mark! Mark, are you there?
Mark slowly lifted his cell phone to his ear.
It's gone, bud.
Mark hung up on Bud and dialed the number for the Ontario Provincial Police, the police agency that had jurisdiction over Highway 401. He wanted to report Motherlode stolen, wanted to tell someone the truck was on the 401 right now and they could catch the thief if they dispatched an officer right now. But things weren't moving as quickly as he'd hoped.
Oh, please.
But...
For 5 long minutes, Mark stared at the empty space where Motherlode used to be parked.
Come on, come on.
Hello, this is Constable Hadley speaking. You wanted to report a stolen vehicle?
Yes.
Just let me say, sir, things will go a lot smoother for you if you just take it easy and keep your voice down.
My truck was just stolen.
Make?
It's a Peterbilt 379. It's on the 401 right now.
Year?
1985, but what's that got to do with
Where was it stolen from?
I'm here at Turtle Jack's in Brampton. It was stolen from the parking lot by a guy
named...
That's right.
Then maybe you should be reporting this to the Peel Regional Police. I think I have their number. Hold on.
Oh, God damn it!
Mark held his cell phone away from his ear and blinked at it several times. The officer had put him on hold. Again.
He's getting away, damn it!
Here's their number. 905-23...
Listen, the guy who stole my truck is eastbound on the 401 right now, and he's driving like a crazy man.
How do you know that?
Because some...
citizen noticed the truck driving erratically and called the 1-800 number on the truck to tell my dispatcher that one of his drivers was going to get somebody killed.
And you're not driving the truck at the moment?
Exactly.
And what's this citizen doing now?
I don't know. I think he's still on the phone with my dispatcher, following the truck.
We don't approve of citizens taking the law into their own hands.
Then send the damn cruiser out onto the highway right now and stop him.
All right. Where is he exactly? And what's the truck look like?
Mark gave the officer the information he needed, doing his best to stay calm, which was almost impossible under the circumstances.
Is that it?
What more do you need?
Just checking. We'll dispatch someone if there isn't already an officer out on the highway.
Thank you. I'll be waiting at this number for your call. Another beer, please.
Coming right up.
Thanks.
Mark looked up at the screen. The Jays had lost to the Red Sox 7-4.
Damn it.
The OPP officer, Constable Hadley, called back an hour later to tell Mark that their officers didn't see any truck on the 401 matching the description he'd given them.
He must have gotten off the highway before we could dispatch our officers.
You think?
Mark didn't give a damn if the officer was offended by his tone of voice. If he'd acted more quickly, there would have been an excellent chance to catch Randy Reynolds red-handed. Mark could have picked up his truck, none the worse for wear, and still have been able to make his first pickup in the morning. Now, he didn't know what the hell he was gonna do.
You're going to have to make a statement to the Peel police on the truck.
But I already told you it was stolen.
True, but since it was stolen in Brampton, you'll have to file a report with them as well, you know, for insurance purposes.
Mark ran his fingers through his hair. Driving a truck was a tough enough job as it was. He needed this extra hassle like he needed a spoon at a steakhouse.
All right, I'll file a report.
And give them this occurrence number, so we can cross-reference reports if we have to.
Fine.
You know, there's a good chance we'll find your truck in a few days in some shipping yard. Usually there's not a lot of damage in cases like this.
Damage?
Motherlode was Mark's life. The thought of her being returned to him damaged in some way, or broken, well, it made him sick to his stomach.
Is there anything else you want to tell me? Anything else you can think of?
The Peel Regional Police Officer, Constable D'Amore, was an attractive young woman, probably no more than a year or two on the job. She seemed sorry for Mark's situation, but she was doing a good job keeping neutral on the subject.
Just that my entire life revolves around that truck.
Oh, what do? Live out of your truck or something?
Mark wondered if telling her the truth would help intensify the search for Motherlode. He didn't think so, and gave her a half-truth instead.
Just about, officer.
The young officer's smile became strained.
Well, we'll make sure other police forces in the GTA are aware of the theft, and with any luck, your vehicle will probably turn up in a day or two.
With not too much damage, right?
That's right.
The officer turned away like she suddenly had other things to do. Mark had walked out of the station, finding himself on Highway 10 across from the provincial courthouse. He could call another cab, this one to take him to a hotel for the night. But he decided to walk for a bit. Walk and think. He headed south for the new Best Western Admiral Hotel that had recently been built on Highway 10 between Brampton and Mississauga. It had been built to cater to business trade in and around the industrial area there. But so far, it hadn't caught on with the truckers, even with a major warehouse facility just down the street. As Mark walked, his thoughts kept revolving around a single question. What would somebody like Randy Reynolds do with a stolen truck? He could sell it, but getting rid of a tractor wasn't easy, especially when it was so personalized the way Motherlode was. It could be stripped for parts, but that took tools and a place to do business from, neither of which Mark imagined Randy Reynolds had. He could take on the load and deliver it, but the guy wasn't doing that under the best of circumstances. It was unlikely he'd do that with a stolen truck.
Stolen!
The word echoed in Mark's head as if it were screamed at him through a tunnel. If he'd already stolen a truck, then why the hell not steal the load too? It wouldn't have to be delivered, and if it was a good load of consumer products, selling items out of the back of a trailer could be done just about anywhere. But what load?
Damn.
And that's when Mark felt his knees go weak as he realized it was his own damn fault, all of it. If he hadn't been so full of himself in the bar and talking about all the great loads he had lined up, then maybe Randy wouldn't have gotten it into his head to steal Motherload in the first place. But if he hadn't told Randy about the loads, then he might not have had a chance to get his truck back from the guy in the morning.
All right, Reynolds. I'm coming for you now.
Mark was behind the wheel of a rented Ford by 8:30 the next morning. His pickup wasn't scheduled for 10, so he had plenty of time to get to the warehouse in Mississauga so he could wait for Randy Reynolds to show up for the load. Bud had filled him in on the details of his first few loads, and they were big scores from a thief's point of view. The first load was stereos and DVD players headed for a retail distribution center in Barrie. From there, he was supposed to pick up a load of mixed freight from a warehouse across town destined for a department store in North Bay. Then he was supposed to take a stack of flatbed trailers back to Calgary, where he would pick up a load of cowboy hats and leather chaps that were on their way to Japan through the port of Vancouver. And it all began in Mississauga with a couple $1 million worth of electronics. Mark turned off Highway 10 onto Matheson Boulevard and headed east nearly three major streets, General Road. He pulled into the lot outside the warehouse at the corner of General Road and Amco Boulevard and checked his watch. It was just after 9. Mark decided to wait for Randy to show up so he could say hello to the man before the police were called in. As he waited, he thought of all the ways he'd like to say hello. A fist in the mouth would be one way. Or maybe a kick in the nuts with a steel-toed boot.
Oh, that's a good one.
Or maybe just a few broken fingers and a warning never to touch Motherload again.
That's what you deserve, you slimy bastard.
At least that way, Randy would have a legitimate excuse for not working. By stealing Motherload, Randy Reynolds would end up with a valid reason not to be working. But if that was the case, why stop at his fingers? By the time Mark glanced at his watch again, it was after 10. He'd been watching the clock closing, but something about doing some serious damage to Randy Reynolds had made time fly.
Who the hell is this guy? Figures he'd be a damn lazy thief as well.
Mark waited until 10:15 before he got out of the car and walked over to the loading docks. He climbed the stairs, opened the door, and found himself just outside the shipper's office. There was a man at the desk inside the office reading the paper, and the rest of the warehouse looked like it was on break. Not like they were expecting someone to be picking up a load in the next few minutes.
Yeah?
Hi, I'm looking for a friend of mine. He was supposed to be picking up a load of stereos and stuff this morning, and I was going to be riding with him, you know, sharing the driving duties all the way out to the West Coast.
He was already here.
What?
I'm pretty sure of it. The guy was here before 8. We weren't even open yet.
The man began looking through the paperwork on his desk.
Yeah, here it is. The guy's name was Mark Dalton. That your friend?
No, I'm Mark Dalton.
He had all the right paperwork.
I bet he did.
There's a problem?
Yeah, I think so.
Mark was tied up at the warehouse for another hour, doing his best to cooperate with the police, but wanting to get out of there as fast as he could. If Reynolds stashed the first load somewhere or sold it to a fence, there was a chance he'd head to the warehouse in Barrie to pick up a second load. If he got there before Reynolds, several hours before Reynolds was due to show up, then maybe he could stop this little crime spree at just 2 loads. Sure, it was a long shot, but Mark had to do something to stop this guy. Mark reached Barrie before noon. The Peel Regional Police had notified their counterparts in Barrie about what was going on, but Mark didn't see any marked cars in the lot.
They must be keeping a low profile so as not to scare him off.
Mark found an empty spot between 2 cars in the employees' parking lot and made himself comfortable. If Reynolds was early again, he wouldn't be by for at least another hour, and when he arrived, Mark would be ready for him. Mark waited for over 2 hours, but there was no sign of Randy Reynolds and Motherload. The guy was either late or had been early. Mark didn't really want to go into the warehouse and find out which it was, but he had no other choice.
Yeah?
It's me, Bud.
What's up?
They found the mother load.
Is she all right?
I don't know, but they did tell me where they found it.
Where?
It's in an industrial park at the south end of Brock Road in Pickering.
Pickering?
Yeah, it's on the east side of Toronto.
Yeah, I know where it is.
Mark's surprise was not over the truck being abandoned in Pickering, but that it wound up in Durham region involving yet another police force.
They want you over there to take a look at the truck.
I'm on my way.
Mark first saw Motherlode from about a half a kilometer away. All the wheels were on it, it didn't look too banged up in any way, and all the windows were intact.
So far, so good.
Mark headed over to Motherlode. The driver's side door was unlocked, which saved Mark the trouble of crawling under the truck to retrieve the spare he had tucked away in a magnetic box behind the oil filter. Mark hesitated opening the door a moment, not sure if he wanted to know what the inside of the truck looked like. But he had to open the door sooner or later, and it might as well be sooner.
Oh, God, no.
It was an absolute mess. There were candy wrappers and melted bits of chocolate all over the carpet. There were several empty coffee cups and pop cans lying around, too, some of them not entirely empty. One can of Coke was still dripping onto the floor, creating a big black stain on the light gray carpet. Then the smell finally hit him. It smelled like urine.
Damn it!
Mark had heard of delivery men sometimes taking a leak in the back of their trucks because they had nowhere else to go. But doing it in the cab, that was just wrong. Mark held a hand over his nose and continued to rummage through the cab, checking the storage flaps on the doors.
Son of a bitch!
The guy had taken everything of value. He'd even taken Mark's stash of Canadian Tire money, which after his last visit to the store amounted to about 35 cents.
Un-goddamn believable.
And if that wasn't bad enough, the bastard had even taken Mark's Blue Jay ticket for next week's game against the Yankees.
You stupid bastard.
Mark wouldn't be attending the game, but there was still a good chance someone else might use his ticket. Mark looked forward to finding out if Randy Reynolds was a big baseball fan. It took a bit of convincing to get the Toronto police to accompany Mark to the Blue Jay game. When he'd first called them and explained the situation, he hadn't known his ticket number, so looking for Randy Reynolds in the crowd of people in the area near first base would have been a big waste of time and resources. Luckily, the trucker he'd bought the ticket from was a season ticket holder, or at least the company he worked for had season tickets, and he'd been able to get the ticket's exact section, aisle, and seat number. Section 116, Row 4, Seat 5. Prior to the game, the police discussed how they might approach whoever sat in the seat and decided not to apprehend anyone in the stands during the course of the game. Instead, the police would have the person in the seat come to them.
And now for the game day Blue Jay giveaway! We'll go first in 5-0-4-1-16.
Mark had staked himself out at the Jays' merchandise booth on the 100th level and pretended to be sizing baseball caps when a large but attractive woman appeared with ticket in hand looking for anyone affiliated with the Blue Jays to help her claim her prize.
What did I win?
An officer decked out in full Blue Jays regalia stepped forward.
We need you to come to the business office to collect it.
That good, huh?
Oh, yeah. That good.
The officer, along with stadium security and someone from the Blue Jays front office, escorted the woman away. Mark followed. When Mark reached the office, he was led into a room where he could listen to the woman being interrogated by police through an opening in a sliding window that adjoined the two rooms. Another officer joined Mark in the room.
I assume that her name isn't Randy Reynolds.
That's right.
Any idea who she is?
Maybe it's his girlfriend. I don't know.
The officer nodded, and the two of them listened in on the interrogation underway in the other room.
What's your name?
Mary Milstead.
So, she is his girlfriend.
Uh-huh. Enjoying the game?
Jay's pitching sucks.
We're curious where that ticket of yours came from.
It was issued by the Toronto Blue Jays Baseball Club.
I mean, how did it come to be in your hands?
A friend at work gave it to me.
Where do you work? Can we have that person's name?
Oh, no. That was last game. This game, I bought it from a scalper out in front of the stadium.
Someone gave it to you, or you bought it from a scalper. Which is it?
Scalper.
You remember what he looked like? You remember how much you paid?
Too much, I can tell you that.
You know anyone by the name Randy Reynolds?
Am I getting a prize pack or what?
Randy Reynolds. Name ring any bells?
Isn't he a third baseman?
No, he's the trucker who might have stolen that ticket you have in your hand.
Wow. You mean he stole it, then sold it to a scalper, and then that scalper sold it to me?
The police didn't have an answer for that, but they did start asking questions all over again.
Where'd you get the ticket?
Mark wondered what the score in the game was. They held her in the office until the bottom of the eighth inning. It was obvious to everyone she was lying, but she was doing it well enough that the police couldn't arrest her or even detain her any longer. When they did let her go, the Blue Jays staff gave her a prize pack, which included tickets to another game, as a gesture of goodwill.
And who says crime doesn't pay?
But as much as he hated to see the woman walk, Mark knew that the police were powerless against her, for now. They'd keep their eye on her, perhaps put out a warrant for Randy Reynolds, and in time, the law would catch up with both of them. It was inevitable, but that didn't do anything to soothe Mark's need for justice now, justice today. And so he decided to administer a little of his own brand of justice, which in the end would be sweeter than anything that could be dished out by the courts. Mark hurried out of the office, picked up an empty drink cup from a nearby garbage container, and made sure his and Mary's path would cross before she left the stadium. He caught up with her at the 200th level.
Mary, is that you?
Mary looked around and saw him approaching. The look on her face was one of confusion.
It is you, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm Mary. Who the hell are you?
Oh, well, my name's Walton, Dirk Walton.
Mark looked at her strangely.
You mean Randy never mentioned my name?
No.
Oh, that's funny. He talks about you all the time.
Mary then smiled, and Mark had his first chance to take a good look at her features. She was pretty enough, but she looked as if hard living had aged her beyond her years. If Mark had to guess, he'd say mid-40s, even though he knew she'd have to be in the mid-30s to run with the likes of Randy Reynolds. There was a hint of gray at her temples, and her fingers had been yellowed by years of cigarette smoke. Her arms and legs were wiry, but had a look of strength to them. He couldn't picture her using her fists against Reynolds, but he imagined she picked up a frying pan or two in her day. And she looked as if she had a mean streak to her that would explode full-born at a moment's notice. No wonder Randy had been so afraid of the woman.
Oh, he does?
Mary smiled slightly, but instead of it being a warm and comforting smile, her eyes had narrowed and her mouth had cracked open slightly, exposing two rows of jagged brown teeth. And all at once, Mark was afraid of her too. But still, he wasn't going to let that stop him from exacting his revenge on Randy Reynolds, the bastard.
Well, he did in the past, but not so much lately because of, well, you know.
What?
Because you and Randy broke up.
First I heard.
Someone named...
Is it Amber? That bitch.
That's a good name for her. Worst of it is, he says she's already given him the HIV, you know, the HIV.
When?
Oh, just recently. But you know how Randy is. He said he wasn't gonna let that slow him down any.
Mary was turning red with anger and looked as if she wanted to hit something with her new Blue Jay tote bag. Obviously, Mark had struck just the right nerve. Randy Reynolds might be able to hide from the police for a while, but Mary? Now that was a whole different story. She'd hook up with him sooner or later, maybe even tonight, and she'd make him pay, big time.
Good game, huh?
Oh, that bastard!
Mary didn't answer him. Instead, she spun around on her heel and headed for the exit, not even bothering to return to her seat and find out how the game turned out. As Mark watched her leave, he thought about letting the cops know she was leaving, but decided against it. The police would be checking her, and they'd catch up with them in due course. Eventually, they'd both be punished for their crimes. But until that happened, Mark wanted to give Mary the chance to spend as much time with Randy as possible. She looked mad enough to do some real damage, and that was the sort of justice that suited Mark and Motherlode just fine.